Welcome to Food for Thought, the place to explore, celebrate, and manifest a life motivated and defined by unconditional compassion and optimal wellness. My name is Colleen Patrick-Goudreau, and I'm your host. The mission in my work is to empower people to manifest their values of compassion and wellness in their everyday lives. I'm the author of The Joy of Vegan Baking, The Vegan Table, Color Me Vegan, Vegan's Daily Companion, On Being Vegan, and the upcoming The 30-Day Vegan Challenge. The book is slated for a January 2015 release, and the online program, of course, is available for you anytime, 30dayveganchallenge.com. You can find out more about who I am and what I do by visiting my website, joyfulvegan.com. I'm grateful to all of you listeners out there and to all of you supporters out there who make this podcast free to all the listeners. For that, supporters receive content that's exclusive to them only via our new Patreon system. You get recipes, resources, messages and essays from me, video hangouts with me, etc. So please become a supporter, a patron, not only to help me continue this work, but also to keep this podcast free to everyone and to receive special exclusive content and connection. You can do so at patreon.com/Colleen Patrick Goudreau. You can also find this at my website, joyfulvegan.com. Before I delve into this special episode just about Italy, I wanted to read a beautiful letter from Gold supporter Natasha Estrade. She wrote, "Hi, Colleen, I'm feeling thankful today. Thankful to have found your podcast and to have had your guidance over the last year and a half since becoming vegan. It's so incredibly difficult to put into words," which is amazing that Natasha says this because she does it so beautifully, but she says, "It's so incredibly difficult to put it into words, the meaning and impact your voice, your thoughts, your soul have had on my life and the lives of anyone who is lucky enough to listen to your work. From as early as I can recall, I've been on a journey that has felt very different than nearly everyone else's. The journey of questioning, why do humans feel righteous in their heartless exploitation of animals? I felt different because it felt as if no one else around me really questioned this or cared much about these living beings that could not defend themselves against humans. I come from a family that, although open-minded in many ways, have largely discarded my views by being of the opinion that consuming animals is just normal, part of the process, how society works. I'll tell you, there's nothing little more liberating than becoming an adult and having the freedom to allow your soul to live exactly as it feels it should. What a beautiful moment when you get to own such an essential part of yourself fully. Becoming vegan has brought on so much more than I could have ever dreamt of. I now see myself as a pioneer, as a forward-thinking individual with a deep responsibility to have a meaningful impact on those who surround me, my community, my nation's legislation, and so much more. It's funny how the vegan label can have such vain and trivial definitions, sexy, cool, hip, skinny, but it's beautifully unexpected when you find out that becoming vegan has the power to elevate what it means to be human. Just as vegans have to get in touch with the very worst of humanity in order to understand why we cannot idly stand by while living beings are being exploited, we also get to see the very best in humanity, in the millions of selfless acts around the globe, stemming from a higher collective consciousness that will bring about monumental change. I'm so lucky to be part of this new consciousness and value your work immensely. Because of the many you inspire to join us in the transformation of our world. Much love from a new supporter, Natasha Estrade." Thank you, Natasha. That's just beautiful. I love what you just said. I think you summed up what it means to be open and conscious and vegan, compassionate in that last paragraph. That was just beautiful. You can follow Natasha into patronage by going to patreon.com/ColleenPatrickGoudreau. And thank you again. Okay, to Italy. We are going to Italy. I'm going to focus on the Italy trip today. So for those who are unaware of this, we had our first international vegan trip with Colleen Patrick-Goudreau to Italy just this past month. So I'm going to talk about everything we did and everything we ate, and not everything. I obviously edited it because it was 2 weeks long. So I'm hopefully making it valuable, and I didn't give you every single specific detail. although it sounds like some of you want that. So I'm not going to include any calls or what would Colleen do questions today. They're just going to have to wait for another time, and we've got a lot waiting in the wings, but I want to focus on Italy. But I can tell you what would Colleen do, because she'd go to Italy. And in fact, I went to Italy, and I don't make it a secret that I love Italy. One of the things I love is that the climate and terrain and food of both Italy and California are very similar. In fact, walking around Italy this time around, especially since this time we were in the summer, we went in the summer rather than in the fall, I noticed so many more flora than I had before. And pretty much everything we saw growing there in Italy grows here really well. And I don't just mean grapes, because obviously we have our wine country here in California, and obviously in Italy there is that. But I don't just mean grapes. I mean the flowers and the trees and the shrubbery. We have so many similar flora. Now, in our new home, it's taken 2 years to get the inside of our house to a livable state. And aside from being thrilled every day that there's no more construction in my house every day, relatively speaking, because we've still got smaller jobs we're doing, but it's safe to say that I am so thrilled to be focusing on the outside, on the gardens. And that means planting everything from edibles. We're just going to make this just an entire edible house, but also to flowers and plants and other things for the wildlife, for birds and bees and butterflies, etc. So this has been on my mind for a while, doing this and really just ramping up this whole garden. But honestly, one of the takeaways from this particular trip was just an inspiration to ramp everything up around Little Montale, which I've named my house, and just make it our own little Italian villa. So I came away inspired just from that perspective, and of course inspired by so much more as well. And my house is named Little Montale because it's named after our favorite place in Italy, in the Umbrian region, Country House Montale, which I highly recommend you go to. And it might even be a place where we do a future trip, just saying. So in short, the trip was really fantastic for so many reasons. And I am confident in saying that it's the first of many of its kind. Vegan tours around the world with me and trusted trip organizers. Now, if you're a supporter, you are going to hear about this first. I'm already starting to plan future trips. And if you do want to hear about these trips before anybody else, you're going to want to become a supporter. I started with Italy because it's Italy. I partnered with Green Earth Travel and worked together. We worked with Tierno Tours to put together this trip. Now, admittedly, it was a little stressful for me in that I had to put my trust in the hands of other people. I had to let go a little bit and trust that the people I had partnered with were, you know, it was all going to be okay because I partnered with trusted people. And I say it's stressful for me because I control everything I do. Everything that has my name on it is something that I can stand by. And I wanted to make sure this trip was perfect. Perfect insofar as expectations were met. And so the process leading up to the trip was intense, I mean, just stressful. And I worked really hard to make sure it was everything it became. But it was good for me because it was good for me to let go a little bit. I did everything I could to put the systems in place to make sure everything would work out well, and was clear about the rest that wasn't my burden to bear. So it was a good test for me. As I always say, know where you end and another person begins. So I did everything I could from my end, and then of course partnered with some wonderful people for them to do their part, and they did fabulously. The trip was also a little stressful, or just planning it, because I didn't know most of the people going on the trip. And it's always a little scary to put yourself in such a vulnerable position. So there was that element for me as well. But honestly, I really do have the most amazing followers. So I wasn't really worried that much. And I, of course, didn't have anything to worry about because it was just a fabulous group of people. And everyone bonded, which was so lovely to see. And halfway through the trip, everyone was already talking about when the reunion would be. So it was just lovely to see how everybody really connected with one another. Now, one of the areas Tierno Tours focuses on is the Cilento region in Campania. They also focus on the Amalfi Coast and Rome. So that was the focus of this trip. We focused on Cilento, Amalfi, and Rome. Now, David and I have been to Florence, many towns in Umbria, many towns in Tuscany, and a few towns just north of Rome. But this was the farthest south we had ever been. And it was really wonderful to just sink into this new region for us. And I knew, as I know about traveling in Italy in general, that the food was going to be the last thing we'd have to worry about. Not only because I had talked to Gretchen from Tierno Tours a million times about the food, where we were going and what we were eating and what we didn't want and et cetera, but also because vegan food, in quotes, you can see me doing my air quotes, i.e. real food, i.e. edible food, is all over Italy. It's the core of Italian cuisine, fruits and vegetables and beans and mushrooms and lentils and, of course, bread and pasta. Now, I'm happy to debunk this myth that it must be difficult to eat vegan in Italy or fill in the name of any other American or other city people can think of. It must be hard to eat in X, right? It must be really difficult to travel to X. We hear that a lot. And that's because of the misconception that vegan food, in quotes, see my air quotes, is somehow separate from quote-unquote real food. And the thing to keep in mind, especially about Italy, is that Italians are obsessed with food. They're obsessed with knowing where things come from, knowing how they're grown, how they're made, etc. So if there's any country that's ideal for knowing exactly what's in the food, it's Italy. One thing I should point out is that this whole slow food movement that's happening in the United States wasn't called a slow food movement in Italy because it's just the way Italians eat. But the entire slow food movement was inspired by Italy. Now, that's taken on other implications as well because the slow food movement has really taken on this slaughter hobbyist movement and this whole idea that if we kill them with kindness, as if that's possible, and it's not, the animals, I mean, obviously, then it's okay. But there are wonderful takeaways from the slow food movement, and that really has to do with knowing where your food comes from and knowing how it's grown and knowing exactly what you're putting in your mouth. Now, I said in a previous episode about travel, and I say this in the 30-Day Vegan Challenge, when going to a restaurant in Italy, you can be sure that you know exactly what's in the dishes you order, right? So what you see on the menu is exactly what you're going to get. Exactly. I mean, literally exactly. Now, I know this, and I say this, and I encourage you to understand this, and I teach this, and yet I still check myself. It's just, I'm so used to it because I live in a country whose restaurants don't tell you exactly what you're going to get, and they put cheese on every single item, whatever it is, right? Whatever it is, you can be sure that if you order something in a standard American restaurant, that cheese will be sprinkled on your salad, on your grains, on your pasta, whatever it is. So you always have to check and just say, can I have the salad? Is there any cheese on the salad? There is, even though it didn't say it on the menu. Okay, can you not put the cheese on? Right, you're so used to that conversation when you're ordering. But that's not the case in Italy. And so here's what happened to me twice when ordering in Italy. In particular, this happened in Rome. And I say in particular because it wasn't really until we got to the Amalfi Coast and then to Rome that we started ordering our own food. Prior to that, all of our food had been taken care of for like 6 days. We would just show up at restaurants and the food would all be there for us, everything, which was pretty amazing. And I think that's why people were really excited about this trip and are excited about future trips because that's what this looks like. You don't have to worry about a thing. All the food is completely taken care of. Now, when we were in restaurants, though, obviously we're taking care of ourselves, or like I said, especially when we were in Rome and we had separated from the group because the group trip was over and we had extended our trip. So we were in Rome and we were at a restaurant near where we were staying. And supporters are going to get the exact name of this restaurant because we went there twice and it was really fabulous. And I'll tell you exactly what we ordered, et cetera. Now, it wasn't the fanciest restaurant in the world, but we really liked it. And I think there at this restaurant was the best pizza we had had of all the pizza we had had in Rome. We liked the street it was on. We liked that it wasn't touristy. We liked the very traditional Roman menu. And we really liked the servers we had both times, especially the first time. He was adorable. And ironically, by the way, when researching everything for this episode, I'm just kind of putting it all together, this restaurant came up again and again as one of the best authentic Italian pizza restaurants in Rome for locals and tourists alike. But so this restaurant, I didn't even know that when we went there, we just happened upon it. And I have a pretty good instinct for these kinds of things. I really do, because you're walking down the street and there's restaurant after restaurant after restaurant after restaurant. And they're all, you know, outdoor seating and some are nicer than others and some are just casual and you can just tell. And I could just tell from like the whole thing. Feel of the restaurant and of course the menu. And I had a really good feeling about this place. And it turned out it's one of the most quote unquote authentic Italian pizza places in Rome. Okay, so I'm ordering. And when I'm in Italy, I do my best to speak Italian whenever I had the chance. I mean, I just do this and I'm aspiring to be fluent in Italian someday. That's a dream. I don't know that it will ever happen. But I do my best to speak Italian whenever I had the chance. And so when we're ordering, I'm saying, you know, whatever, bruschetta and insalata tre colori and pasta e fagioli and pizza marinara and, you know, all this. So I'm saying it. And then for each one, whenever I'd order, I'd say, non formaggio, sì, non formaggio. So no cheese, right? Non formaggio. And each time I would order like, well, I know pizza marinara doesn't have any cheese, so I wouldn't say it about that. But, you know, something like the pasta e fagioli, which is pasta and beans, I'd say, right, and non formaggio, or I'd do it at the very end, right, no formaggio. And he knew I had said this maybe four times. And so he was very pleasant. And when he responded, he really, I've talked about this reaction before, and it happens every time. His reaction was like, no, of course not, there's no cheese. And in his mind, he's probably thinking, does it say cheese on the menu? Because you're looking right at the menu, and you know it doesn't say cheese, so no, it doesn't have cheese. So he didn't say that. He was very pleasant. And he just said, no, of course not. And so then when I ordered everything, I said in Italian, could we also have some water, please? And he said, e senza formaggio, giusto? He said, and no cheese with that, right? Without cheese. And very funny. It's very cute. And I said, no, of course. Yeah, funny. Yes, no cheese. So he got the point because I had made the point that I don't want cheese on anything, including in my water. And that happened at another restaurant as well. We were with friends and we ordered everything. And when we're ordering, we're saying senza formaggio, no formaggio. And we ordered wine or something. And he's like, and no formaggio, giusto? Like no cheese in your wine, right? Yes, no cheese in my wine. But that's what we have to deal with here in the United States. So, but even the non-vegan servers and Italian restaurants in Italy, not Italian restaurants, I would say, in the United States, but in restaurants in Italy, they think it's unnecessary to constantly make sure something is vegan on the menu if it doesn't indicate that there's an animal product in the dish. I cannot stress how easy it is to eat real, edible, i.e. vegan food in Italy. And yeah, I am starting to use, instead of vegan and non-vegan, I'm really starting to use edible versus inedible, because food is edible and dead individuals and their secretions are not. So this vegan, non-vegan, sure, I'll keep saying that in certain contexts, but really, is the food edible or is the food inedible? To me, that's the difference between quote-unquote real food, vegan food, non-vegan food. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't restaurants we were less inclined to go to. You could take a quick glance at the menu, and most menus are posted right outside the restaurant, and you can see right away if A, it's more authentic. So you see antipasti and primi and contorni. That's what you're going to see on the menus, right? That's the first course, second course, the sides. And the sides, the contorni, is where you'll often find that's where all the vegetables are. And so you can always find vegetables and pasta and pizza and mushrooms, funghi, etc. on the menu. So you can see that right away. You can find out right away when you look at the menu if it's catering to tourists, i.e. there's a lot of meat and hamburgers and such. You can tell that it's catering to Americans. And C, you can tell right away if it's shishi poo-poo, which means it's very meat heavy. You can tell that very quickly. You can also tell a touristy place very quickly if they're standing outside trying to draw you in. And if they compliment your Italian or flatter you in any way, run in the other direction. It's a tourist trap. So you can tell right away just looking at the menu and just go with what feels right. Now, in the past, my recommendation was to learn the names of animal products in Italian so you can detect those on the menu and know how to avoid them. Now, a lot of menus have it written in English as well, but you'll know right away if there are animal products on the menu. And I think it's also helpful for you to identify the names of fruits and vegetables too, so you can identify them. So I've said that before, and I stand by that. But one thing I can definitely say was different this time in Italy than several years ago when we were there last is that the word vegan is much more known, and specifically vegano. Now, I've said in the past there was this word, I think it's also like this in French. So there's vegetariano with an R is vegetarian, and then vegetaliano with an L is vegan. I don't even know who uses that. I think you see that in the French language as well. But honestly, I didn't see that. Don't like it. I never did. But vegano or vegana is definitely familiar. So you could say sono vegana, sono vegano. And people know what that means. I'm vegan. People know what that means. Or if you're asking about a specific dish, a vegano, oh, is it vegan? Yes. And people know that that means no meat and no cheese and no eggs. You can still say non formaggio, etc. in Italian. But I found that people really knew when we were ordering, we would say we are all vegan, and they knew immediately what that meant. And I think that's a really hopeful sign. I think that's fantastic. Now, as I said, in the first part of our trip, we stayed in a part of Italy we had never been before. And frankly, an area I probably never would have gone. It's just not one of the main places in tour books. Not that we look for places in tour books. We do tend to like places off the beaten path, but we just never would have gone here. And it was really, really, really awesome. What was so nice, to my mind, about where we stayed in the first part of the trip was that we really sunk into the culture. We really got to know the people. For me, I really sunk into the language, talking to a lot of locals, and there was a lot of natural beauty. So if you look at the photos from the first half of our trip, and you can see them, I'll have these posted on Google+, you'll notice a lot of greenery. We just did a lot of outdoor things, which was, for me, just I love that. Of course, I love the cities for culture and art, but I don't want my whole trip to be a city. I just need to be around nature. I'm very sensitive to city noises. I just like things very quiet. So the area we stayed in is a protected area that's a national park that cannot be built on anymore. And so this park is filled with a number of different villages. It's just there are villages throughout this whole park. And each village has its own character and personality. And so we went to and stayed in several of these different villages. Now, it's a large agricultural region as well. And everyone has their own garden. It's not an agricultural region like in California or Iowa when you drive for miles and miles looking at the same monocrop, be it grapes or corn, but you see gardens everywhere. I mean, there are some olive tree crops where there's a field of olive trees that they harvest, but they're small plots and everyone just had their own plots and gardens. And in fact, the first villa we stayed in just overlooked the hillside of houses and gardens, just gardens. It was just beautiful. And of course, that made me more inspired and inclined to come home and ramp up our edible gardens, as I said, in the old house, in our old house that we sold 2 years ago, which is up for sale again. I just found out it's very sad. It was a couple who had a baby who bought this house and they were so excited about it. And they were so excited about all the edible gardens we had planted. It really is very, it's just amazing. It's unlike any other house on the street because we put so much work into it. We had planted 17 trees. Most of them were edibles. Anyway, the couple's divorcing and it's very sad. So the house is up for sale again. Anyway, but in the new house here, we have to start from scratch. We have, of course, all these wonderful mature oaks, and that's, I'm so thrilled to have all these mature trees because we didn't have that in the old house. But as far as all the edibles, we're starting from scratch and we're doing it. And again, part of, I've been wanting to do this forever since we've moved here. That's not forever, I guess. That's just 2 years, but I've been meaning to do this, but being in Italy just inspired me to just do it even more. So we've already been to the nursery and last week we bought an orange tree, a lemon tree, a lime tree, a persimmon tree, a pluot, and a pomegranate. And we got 2 blueberry bushes because you have to get 2 in order for them to grow. We got more herbs, more tomatoes, and a caper bush, inspired also by our trip to Italy. So just as an aside, when we were walking around Rome with our guide, at one point he picked something from a bush and he put it in my hand and he asked me what it was. And it was a caper. I was so excited to see a caper, like in the wild, growing on its own and uncured. I'd never seen an uncured caper before. So for those of you who don't know what a caper is, it's just a little bud. They're little unopened flowers, little buds of this bush. And this bush is native to the Mediterranean. And of course, these buds are only eaten cured. So cured means they're soaked in brine or salt. Brine is just salt water. So they're just cured in salt. And along with this transcript that supporters get the transcripts for the podcast, you're also going to get a favorite recipe of mine that features capers. And I'm going to give you some more information about capers and ways to use capers in your dishes. It was so cool to see a caper. And that was my inspiration. We're growing capers. So wish me luck. We have a perfect sunny, rocky hillside for them because capers kind of like it to be a little rough. And so I'm really hoping to start curing them. Of course, it's going to take a while for this bush to take off, but I am very excited to grow capers. So I was very excited and again, inspired. And here I am, inspired by Italy for so many reasons. Now, another thing that was so lovely about the small towns we were staying in was the generosity and the vivaciousness of the people. They're Italian, so it's not that surprising, but it was just fantastic to really experience it, certainly more than I think we did before. Now, I don't think it will surprise you to hear that we ate and drank a lot on this trip. I don't think I've ever just sat around as much as I did on this trip, and I don't think I've ever sat around as much as we did just drinking wine and eating. a lot. A lot of bread. We ate a lot of bread. It's true. But we really just every single day, dinner and then after dinner and lunch, we just ate and drank. Now, of course, we have a food and wine culture here in California, but Italians have the food and wine culture. Frankly, I think they also have more of a people culture. And I don't want to have to make these comparisons, but they're just the things that I loved so much about being there. You know, we're obviously wonderful, friendly people. I love that about Americans, and that's really obvious. But there's just something a little different. So, for instance, I always talk about how much I love to entertain, and we do have parties and dinner parties not infrequently. And of course, I talk a lot about the regular happy hours we have here in our neighborhood, which I love so much. What was really lovely about being in Italy is there's a real appreciation for communing with one another, but also with strangers. And of course, they commune with each other just for hours and hours, which is really lovely. And it's very easy for me to make fun of myself, and of course, for David to make fun of me, because I'm not very good at just sitting still. I'm not very good at not feeling guilty when I'm not working. I'm not very good at just kind of being and just enjoying and just being idle. And clearly, though, it's something I admire and perhaps secretly aspire to, because I did a damn good job of it when we were in Italy, just being idle. So it was pretty awesome. Although I knew that I was also collecting information to be able to share with you. So there were times I had to make myself feel better about being idle, thinking that this was also work, because I was collecting information in my head and writing things down and writing notes about the trip so I could share that with my podcast listeners. So I wasn't that idle. I was idle. I really was. So we did this night after night. We just spent time with one another, all 27 or 28 of us, which was a big group, and it probably won't be that big again, but it was a wonderful group. And we would just sit around eating, drinking, talking, and dare I say a little dancing on my part. A couple others, wasn't just me, but we won't mention that. In fact, everyone on the trip had to sign a disclaimer that what happened in Italy stayed in Italy. We had a lot of wonderful nights just being with one, and days too, but the days were busier with activities. But we had a lot of nights just like sitting around laughing, a lot of drinking. Now I'm kidding kind of about the disclaimer, but really what was amazing was that we were all so blown away by how much we drank and never got inebriated. Honestly, all of us felt the same way, and we never felt bad the next day. So I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that all the wines we drank were made locally, literally in people's backyards and basements, and they were all really lovely. And it was really funny because I don't think we're California wine snobs, David and I. I mean, I don't think we're wine snobs, but we love California wines. We love California Zinfandel. And before we left for Italy, we were both saying that we were afraid we weren't going to like the wine in Italy, because we've had a few Italian wines here in the past and we never really liked them. And we live in California, so we kind of don't need to drink other kinds of wine, I guess. There's so many different kinds of wines here in California, so we don't drink a lot of non-California wines. So we were all like, I don't think we're going to like the wine there, but we'll have to see. And we were so wrong. And especially again in Cilento, where we were in the beginning, it was mostly locally made wine. In Rome and Amalfi, we had some other types of wine, but we liked it all. And mostly everything we drank was red. I think there were a couple times I ordered white, which made me feel guilty because, you know, everyone's drinking red. But there's a theory that you don't feel the effects of the wine because of the fact that there's no sulfites in the wine in Italy. Sulfites, if you don't know, they're basically a preservative, and that's what keeps the wine from going bad too quickly. And sulfur has been used as a preservative back when the Roman Empire was in full swing. And a very small segment of the population is actually allergic to sulfites. So I'm not convinced it's sulfites that makes you not feel inebriated drinking so much. I think it's because there's less alcohol. That's my theory, and I'm not alone in that theory. There's just a lot less alcohol in the wine in Italy than in the wine in the U.S. And we've come home and we've had some wine since we've been home, much less wine than we had when we were in Italy. And I could feel the effects immediately. So another reason to return to Italy to go drink wine and not feel inebriated. So that was lovely. So not only did we spend a lot of time together as a group and just wining and dining, we also spent a lot of time with locals. And that's something that I loved so much. And some of that was just by accident. So back to this vivaciousness of the Italians. Now, David and I and Bridie and Seb, some of you know Bridie. She's the one who answers my love letters. So some of you may have had Bridie respond to one of your love letters, and there's not a better person to do that. So I was really thrilled that Bridie and Seb could join us on this trip. And the four of us spent a lot of time together. So a few times the four of us would return to our villa And there was some kind of festival or party or celebration going on. And the host would literally just usher us in and insist we join them. It was wonderful. Now, for one party, we arrived at our villa and we had been out all day and we were tired and we were just going to go relax for an hour before our ride picked us up again. But as soon as the host saw us, he ushered us in and he set up an area for us to sit at and immediately brought over food and wine for us. And of course, we all started enjoying the wine and the bread, the things that we could identify as vegan, which was pretty much just the bread. But there were a few things on the tray that we weren't sure about and one or two things that looked like they had dairy. Now, not the dairy that you see in the United States where there's just gobs and gobs of it and you could tell right away that it's just gooey, disgusting cheese. But there would be just a little bit. It just looked like there was a little bit, but enough that, of course, we didn't want to eat it. So at one point, the host came over and asked how we were doing and kind of inquired about the uneaten food. This was all exchanged in broken Italian and broken English on his part. And we just said we were so appreciative for his generosity, but that we were vegan. And he indicated that he understood, and he took the plate away. And not 10 minutes later, he returned with a plate filled with only edible, get it? Edible, vegan food, olives, almonds, more bread. I can't even remember what else. And it was fantastic. And it was just so sweet. And so I'm just thinking about what it would be like if we were having a party at some kind of villa, right? At some kind of hotel or someone's house or whatever. And I think this was a first communion, this particular one. There were more than one celebration that we were invited to. But I think this one was a communion. And I'm just thinking of what it would be like if a couple strangers just appeared at the hotel, you know, the bed and breakfast or whatever, the equivalent. And we would probably say, oh, you're at the wrong place or this is whatever. I'd like to think I would invite them because I'm kind of imagining that scenario and I think I would invite them. But I still think we kind of have this notion that like, oh, this is our party. That's your party over there. And, you know, we're doing this thing and maybe can I help you find your party? You know, as opposed to, oh, you know, come on in and here's some wine and here's some food. And it was just that was just really inspiring. And again, I'd love to believe that we would do that, and I'm just going to make sure I do from now on in the future. So one of the best nights, I think everybody who was on this trip would probably agree with me, took place after a long, long day in one of the villages. We had spent the day in Padula, going to an old monastery, eating a huge and delicious lunch at a local restaurant, again, that Gretchen had totally arranged in advance. So we didn't even have to order. We just walked in, everybody sat down, and the food and wine and everything was just brought to us. And then we went on another tour to Joe Petrosino's house, which was awesome. And then we had a long ride home. Now, after lunch, we had all stopped at a farm stand. And the plan that Gretchen announced was that everyone was going to kind of pick up some fruits and veggies that they would prepare that night for everyone, like for a huge communal dinner. And it was funny because I could kind of sense that people were like, oh, I didn't know we were going to cook. I thought Colleen was going to do a cooking demo. So I asked everyone if that's what they had expected. And they said yes, but they were also excited about preparing some things themselves. So what we did was everybody picked something out and to pair up with someone else, that they would prepare something together. And then we would have this big communal dinner at one of the villas that we had stayed at. It was just a place that allowed for all of us sitting at different tables to be in one space. It was really lovely. We'd just taken over the whole villa. So we had this wonderful day, this long, wonderful day. And on the ride back to the main villa that night, it was getting close to 9 o'clock p.m. And truth be told, I was utterly exhausted and I didn't feel like I could perform. You know, I didn't really feel like I could do a cooking demo. So we arrived at the villa. It was me and David and Bridie and Seb because we were in a separate van and everybody else had arrived about 15 minutes before we did, not that much earlier before we did. And they also had the same long, exhausting day I did. But the mood, I was just so moved. The mood and the energy was so high and so joyful that my fatigue left me right away. Everyone was pitching in, working with their partners, finding stations to work at, and putting together, I'm going to cry, putting together the most delicious, creative, beautiful dishes from ingredients they had picked up that day at this market. It was so lovely and so inspiring. And we all sat down and had this amazing communal dinner. And there must have been 15 dishes. I mean, there must have been. There was arugula salad and tomato salad and marinated cabbage and roasted beets, lots of grilled veggies, a melon and fruit salad with chopped pistachios on top. Just unbelievable. And it was so fantastic. I think it was a night to remember. And I hope On one level, it was a night to forget because that was the night I shared my special dance. I have a special dance. I shouldn't even tell you this. I have a dance reserved for the opening credits of the Game of Thrones. So that's all I'll say. And I only ever do it just home watching Game of Thrones with my husband. And even when we would go to friends' house, because we would watch Game of Thrones with our friends, Tim and Ellen, they didn't even get to see the Game of Thrones dance. So I showed everyone my Game of Thrones dance. It's very simple, really, but it's reserved only for the Game of Thrones. And so we'll just leave it at that. And so will everyone who witnessed it. We shall never speak of it again. So our days were packed with activities and driving. There was a bit of driving back and forth between the villages. So that's also tiring. And because of that, just because of the fullness and the wonderful fullness of these days and the driving, by the fourth day, I was really, really, really jonesing for a hike. I needed to be outside and just move and not have anything specific to do. I just wanted to be in the woods among the trees. And so one day where most of the group went to the planned activity, which was lovely and beautiful and everyone loved it, a few of us stayed behind and we went to the local village. We picked up a bunch of picnic food. One of us, Jen, even picked up a little checkerboard tablecloth. And then we all went to this park, this area, this hiking area, and had a pretty awesome picnic before a pretty awesome hike. And it really was another just day to remember, perfect day. And yes, supporters, your transcript will have details about where we picnicked and where we hiked. But it was just so beautiful. And everyone can see photos of the hike on my Google Plus page. And I say that because I have now connected my Google Plus account. That's where I upload all of my photos in terms of just photo storage. So that's why Google Plus is where I have all of my photos. Certainly, I put ones, you know, individual photos out here and there on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. But if you want to see just the albums, you can go to Google Plus and please join my circles there or whatever you do at Google Plus because I'm doing a lot more content over there. Now, that night after the hike, it had already been planned that Antonella and myself, Antonella owns the bed and breakfast that half of the group stayed at. She owns the bed and breakfast with her husband, Alessandro. And I fell in love with them. And I think everybody did. They are just lovely, lovely, lovely people. And so Antonella and I did a spontaneous cooking demo that night because she had already served some delicious food to the folks staying at the bed and breakfast. And they were interested in some of the dishes. So she and I did this wonderful cake. Well, she made it. And she and I, with translators, did a fun cooking demo making this cake and including a vegan Nutella that she had made. Now, supporters will get this recipe. You'll get the whole recipe for the cake that we did. It was the first time we had done anything like this using Google Hangout video on air so that people around the world could join us and watch. And it was good to do. It wasn't perfect. It's on YouTube. It's not perfect at all. But you can just get a peek at what we were doing. The main thing is that next time in the future, for future trips, I'll make sure that I have some kind of wireless mic with me. That's all we would have needed. I think that would have taken care of everything so that you, the public watching from wherever you are, really could enjoy the cooking demo or anything. I mean, other activities I do can be shown through this on-air hangout, and I was really excited to just get that going and get that tested. So thank you, Jim. I know Jim out there, who was one of the participants on the trip, he really helped me set that up. So otherwise, you know, I think it was really great, and you can go see it on YouTube, but we had a really fun time with these folks at the bed and breakfast, and it was just lovely. The next day, before we headed out of Cilento, we went to the castle at Rocca d'Aspire, and we then went to a pizza place afterwards where I did another cooking demo, and we ate probably more pizza in one sitting than I've ever had in my life. This was also really good pizza. We had four different types of pizza. Let me see if I can remember. It was Italian pumpkin and squash blossoms. That was one pizza. Porcini mushroom and potato was another pizza. Then there was one that had a salad on top of the pizza. And then there was one with zucchini and tomato sauce. And oh my God, just ridiculous and delicious and wonderful and fabulous. I demonstrated how to make pizza dough and pesto and a new lentil salad from the 30-Day Vegan Challenge. Now, of course, you can find my pizza dough recipe in the vegan table. And when the revised edition of the 30-Day Vegan Challenge comes out, you'll have the lentil salad. Yes, supporters get this recipe early. So in your transcript will be this recipe. But as I said, there's already a pizza dough recipe in the vegan table. And my pesto is also in the vegan table. So it was just lovely to do this cooking demo in this restaurant among more fabulous people. And so we left Cilento. We went down to the Amalfi Coast, which is a tourist destination, but it's a tourist destination for a reason because it's kind of ridiculously beautiful. A little ridiculous. A little ridiculous. ridiculous, I think. And really, I heard like just a couple decades ago, there were no cars in this area at all. Now it's pretty much overrun with tourists, which is fine because we were among them. I like to call ourselves travelers rather than tourists, but nonetheless, we loved it. And the town we stayed in, Positano, was lovely. Maybe some people would disagree with me. We drove through every other town because when we were leaving, you keep driving through all these other towns. Positano looked like the prettiest town to me. So again, Tierno Tours setting this up for us. They picked the best places to stay and it was fabulous. The produce in Positano, probably in the whole Amalfi Coast area, was probably the best produce I've ever had, ever, ever, ever. We had a lovely room with a balcony and a beautiful view. I hope everyone did. There were fireworks the first night we were there. I don't think they were for us, but still it was pretty awesome. There were fireworks when we arrived. And we had a couple good meals in Positano. Some of the meals were at tourist places, and so I don't think they were the best meals we've ever had. I think the best meals we had were in Cilento and in Rome, because again, this is kind of a touristy area. And I'm sure there were some off the beaten path places we didn't go to, and we didn't do a lot of research. We would just kind of go to the places that were conducive to seating 20 of us at a time, because we all still wanted to spend time together. Even when we were, you know, we had free time and we had free days or free nights, we all still hooked up and connected with one another to spend time with one another, which was lovely. Now the next day was another day to remember. We went on another hike on this route called the Walk of the Gods. And what a walk it was. It started off, first of all, by discovering the most adorable, adorable, adorable shop on the main street in Positano. It looked so adorable. So we were meeting some friends and we needed to get some food for the hike. And Bridie had already recommended a place they had gotten some sandwiches at, which was probably lovely, and her sandwiches were lovely. But we're walking past this shop and I could tell from the outside, could tell it's adorable. And on the outside was painted organic smoothies, panini. And I just knew that it would be awesome. So we walked in and we opened the menu, and under panini, it said vegano. So they had this specifically vegan sandwich that was tomatoes. Everything was gorgeous right in front of us. The tomatoes, avocado, grilled zucchini, and arugula. So they made these sandwiches for us and we bought a couple bananas and apples and we were good to go for a hike. So 8 of us ventured out on this hike and it was incredible. It started with 1,700 steps up, 1,700. You heard that, 1,700 steps up, and then a several hour hike from there. And you can see photos again on Google+, and I recommend this hike highly, highly, highly. We stopped halfway to eat our picnic lunch and it was just magical. It was really clear at one point as we were venturing on that the rainstorm that was now out on the water, because this hike was all going up, 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 up over the water. So just, you can imagine the views. We could see that this rainstorm was coming. So we were mindful of moving pretty quickly down the mountain, and it started to rain. And when it started to rain, there was a cave right there for us. And so by this time it was 6 of us. Some other ones had stopped at one point in the hike and turned around. But 6 of us went into this cave. We just hung out for the maybe 10 minutes that it rained. It didn't last very long. Took some photos, had some more laughs, and we moved on. But it was just magical. It's like, really? We're like running down this mountain in the Amalfi Coast and it starts to rain. Then we find a cave and we put some, you know, Italian arias on, or I did. And it was just ridiculous. So if you want to do the whole hike, you can do it. I think it takes several days to do the whole thing, the whole Walk of the Gods. But we did just a segment of it, and it took about 6 or so hours. We ended in another town that you could see when you were in Positano. You could see this town, but, you know, it was pretty far. And while we were waiting for the bus to get back to Positano, yes, we were taking a bus back. We had been hiking all day. We didn't want to go 6 hours back. So we were waiting for the bus to go back to Positano, and we popped in this little roadside bar, this little cafe that had the most delicious chocolate gelato, with the richest gelato I've ever had. So for those who think you can't get vegan gelato, do not hesitate to go into any gelato place or gelateria. And you can either look at their offerings and look for those that say senza latte, so without milk, or con soia, so with soy. So S-O-I-A is how it's spelled in Italian. So almost every place, there were some gelaterias we went into and we asked if there was a vegan, you know, or a soy-based gelato, and some said no. But most of the places had 1 or 2 or 3 offerings of vegan gelato. In fact, the ones that we went to, and there was a chain that we kept going to, had chocolate, hazelnut, and pistachio were the 3 different ones. good, really amazing. So we took the bus back to Positano, and then David and I, on the walk back from the bus stop to our hotel, we stopped by a little market and we bought a fresh baguette and tomatoes and wine and strawberries and marinated artichokes and just rested on our little balcony until we got up again maybe an hour and a half later and met everyone for drinks and dinner. So that was the end of our day. We just went to dinner. We met everyone at the restaurant. We drank again into the wee hours of the night, only to get up the next morning and get ready to venture to Rome, but not before we stopped in Pompeii and not before we first returned to that adorable cafe to pick up more vegan panini for our journey. And while we were there at the little cafe, I had the pleasure of meeting the owner, the most delightful, beautiful, beautiful woman. And that's where we bought pretty much the only souvenirs we bought for the whole trip. We don't check our bags when we travel, so we're always mindful of not buying a bunch of stuff, especially heavy things. And so we couldn't resist, though. We bought four beautiful hand-painted bowls, like salad bowls, and a gorgeous linen table runner, of course, all of which were made in Italy. And David was able to pack them into his suitcase with no problem. So you can see photos on Google+. I can't recommend it highly enough. It's basically, the name of the cafe is Cafe e Bottega, and that just means cafe and boutique. So Cafe e Bottega, and it was a cafe and boutique. Prettiest store I've ever seen. Highly recommend it for the food. We also got smoothies there. And what I loved, that's right, I forgot about this. So we got the panini for our journey to Pompeii, and we knew we were going to eat there in Pompeii before we got to Rome. So we got the panini for that, but that was morning, so we also wanted some breakfast. And we had had some fruit at the hotel, but we wanted some smoothies. And I loved it that their smoothies were actually, when we asked them what kinds of smoothies they had, they designated them by color. So you know I love this because of Color Me Vegan, my book. And so she said, do you want a red smoothie? And she named the different things in the red smoothie, like blueberries and blackberries and red apple and I can't remember what else. And do you want the yellow smoothie, which was like melon and pineapple, banana, and that kind of thing? Or do you want the green smoothie, which was greens and all of that? So it was just lovely that they designated the smoothies according to the color. So go there when you're in Positano. So we headed out of the Amalfi coastal area. We made our way toward Rome. We stopped in Pompeii, of course, the ancient city that was buried when Mount Vesuvius, a volcanic mountain, erupted. But the good thing about that volcano erupting and burying this city is that it preserved this city. And I have to be honest, I didn't really know what to expect. I didn't really spend a lot of time looking at, you know, what this would look like. But my expectations, I had none, were blown away, which was good to have no expectations. It was just remarkable to see the ingenuity of the Romans on this scale. This city could have been built 100 years ago. It felt that modern. And it was fantastic. So if we do this particular trip again, Pompeii will remain on the itinerary. It was breathtaking, got pictures on Google+. And surprisingly, the food stands, we really didn't even have to get all those panini. The food stands for a tourist place were very good. We had a really good pizza because one of us wanted pizza. I won't mention any names. Seb, all he obsessed about was pizza. Everywhere we went, he just wanted pizza. So Seb got a pizza and it was really, really good. And then we hit the road for Rome. Now in Rome, being a major city, you can imagine there are not only vegan-friendly restaurants, or restaurants with edible food because it's Rome, because you're in Italy, but there are also vegan-only restaurants. And so the first night we were in Rome, we ate at OPS, O-P-S, Cucina Mediterranea. And it was our last night with the group. So all of us went here and ate together. And some of us extended our trip longer in Rome, but this was our last night with the whole group. So we had this, oh my God, it was this huge buffet. Like you wouldn't even believe that. I mean, just like, I think there were like 30 different things you could choose from. And you just picked whatever you want, put whatever you want on your plate, and you paid by the weight. So you just put whatever you wanted on your plate. And there were, we just gorged. It was ridiculous. And everything was vegan. It was just fantastic. I think everyone was just really excited by that. In fact, I know some people were. Seb danced. Remember the dance, Seb? So I'm not the only one who was sharing dances here. Seb danced. And so after that, a good-sized group of us walked around after dinner. First, we went to the Spanish Steps and we drank some wine at the Spanish Steps. We were there for about an hour. And then we walked over to the Trevi Fountain and we had some more gelato with everyone. And then we walked over to the Pantheon. And then we walked over to the Piazza Navona. And we said goodbye. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning by then. It was just an absolutely magical time with everyone. It was such a special group. And I, as I said, was so thrilled that everyone bonded. And it was lovely for me, of course, to meet so many fabulous people who I've met either only briefly or had email contact with only or have only ever seen on Facebook or some I didn't know at all. So it was just lovely. And I thank everyone who participated and made it as special as it was. And our time in Rome was also really fantastic. We continued to spend practically all of our time with Seb and Bridie. It was just the four of us. And we stayed, David and I, at a wonderful apartment through Airbnb that I would recommend in a heartbeat. And yes, supporters will get the name and the details of this particular apartment. It was in a fantastic area of Rome. It was very much a neighborhood, very much felt like you're like in a neighborhood of a large town. Like, I don't like being gobbled up by cities. And I was really afraid I was going to feel really gobbled up by Rome, but I never did. And I think a lot of it was because we stayed in this wonderful neighborhood called Trastevere. Trastevere is where I definitely recommend you stay. And I was really excited for those of you who love etymology and language, as I do. It literally means beyond the Tiber, because the Tiber River, which runs through Rome, is called Tevere in Italian. So Trastevere, Trastevere means beyond the Tiber. Don't you love that? I love it. So it's an area on the west bank of the Tiber, and it's got a wonderful rich history that I can't go into here. I don't have time. But when the Romans conquered this area from the Etruscans, they had no desire to build on this area. And so it retains this wonderful charm that I absolutely loved, and it has this wonderful medieval feel to it as well. So we did some special things together, some specific tours and such, but we also just really enjoyed walking around, getting to know this neighborhood, enjoying local spots. Now, to be honest, we didn't use apps to find vegan restaurants very often, even when we were in Rome, because we just really prefer to enjoy local restaurants. Sometimes you just want to eat. You don't want to make a thing of eating every time or like finding the restaurant. So I, of course, encourage you to check out different apps like Happy Cow to find the specific vegetarian and vegan restaurants in Rome, but we just prefer the local restaurants, you know, just the local food. Now, once we did grab a sandwich for the day we were going to be out for hours on a tour, we grabbed a sandwich, or Bridie and Seb actually grabbed it for us at Universo Vegano, which was okay. The sandwich was okay. I would have liked to have tried them again, because the sandwich was a day old by the time we ate it, because we didn't eat it on our tour like we thought we were going to. We had it later the next day. But the bread was just too thick, and there was very little on the inside. I thought it was going to be a whole vegetable sandwich, but it was very thin. So I love that they're a vegan franchise. They're a vegan franchise in Rome. Sandwiches, fast food in Rome, fantastic, and I want them to succeed. So I do recommend checking them out. Just ask them for a little extra filling in your sandwiches if you find that yours is too thin like mine was. But Universo Vegano. So one day that was very special, and I'm about to geek out, so you're just going to have to deal with it. I'm warning you. But we went to the Castel Sant'Angelo. And for those of you who know, David and I are opera fans. Maybe you don't know, but David and I are opera fans. And the Castel Sant'Angelo was commissioned by Hadrian in the second century. So crazy. The second century. So Hadrian, as you probably know, was a Roman emperor. He was considered one of the five good ones, because there were very few good ones, especially when the empire was in decline. Just not a lot of good ones. And Hadrian was one of the few who wasn't a complete despot. If you're curious about the five, because I always am, you've got Nerva, Trajan, who you've heard me talk about, because I've named one of the deer Trajan. All of the deer are named after Greek or Roman figures. So Trajan was a good one, Hadrian was a good one, Antoninus Pius, and Marcus Aurelius. Now, just a couple things. One is I highly recommend you read Marcus Aurelius's Meditations. It's quite remarkable. I gave a bunch of copies to people at Christmas one year, and I plan on doing that again and again, just buying copies and giving them to friends, because I think it's remarkable. It's one of the texts that got me through a really rough patch a couple years ago, along with the Tao Te Ching, also written in the 4th century BC. Like, really? Are you kidding? Like, these are like timeless wisdom, both of these. But Marcus Aurelius's Meditations, which is his thoughts on Stoic philosophy, was written in the 2nd century AD. Just amazing. So it was really cool to expound upon some Roman history from our last trip, because our last trip was in northern England and Scotland, and we made a point to see Hadrian's Wall. So Hadrian, one of the things that was really great about Hadrian was that he was the first emperor to say, okay, I think as an empire, we've expanded just about as far as we should and could to be sustainable. Of course, it was probably too late, because it wasn't sustainable at that point. And he's the one who said, we're drawing the line, literally, and he created a boundary at the northernmost point in Roman Britain. So he built what's called Hadrian's Wall. And so we went and saw that when we were in England and Scotland last year. He also rebuilt the Pantheon, which was fantastic to see, and other things. And he also traveled to almost every province of the empire, which is pretty remarkable considering how vast it was. So that was Hadrian. Now, he commissioned a mausoleum for himself and his family, which has been many things over the centuries. And now it's Castel Sant'Angelo. And for a time, it was a prison. Which brings me back to opera. I am probably guilty of saying this is my favorite or that's my favorite or whatever, like as if we have to pick something. But one of my favorite operas, I'll say one of my favorite operas, probably my favorite, is Tosca, which is by Puccini. And it's very just melodic and beautiful and melodramatic also. But the characters are very real and very human. And the music is some of my favorite music. In fact, this is the opera that David and I know most of the words to, the different arias. And so dorks that we are, we sing them to one another when we're driving or what have you. And for our 10-year wedding anniversary, we got our wedding bands engraved with the last line of one of the arias from Tosca. The aria is Recondita Armonia, and the line is Il mio sol pensier sei tu. So essentially, you're the only one I think of. Il mio sol pensier sei tu. It's the last line of Recondita Armonia. And so sadly, some of the group traveling with us one night back to our villa, they were tortured by David and I singing this aria on the way home. Also, something that will hopefully leave their minds. Maybe they don't even remember that we did that, but that's what happens. That's what happens, apparently, when I've had a little wine. Not a little. We had a lot. I dance Game of Thrones and sing Italian arias, so it could be worse. So there are three settings, or just like three settings in this opera. And one of them, one of the settings in this opera is the Castel Sant'Angelo, where the main character, Cavaradossi, is imprisoned. So several years ago, a film was made of the opera starring Placido Domingo, who's my favorite Cavaradossi. And they filmed in the actual settings the fictional story takes place in. So going to Castel Sant'Angelo was amazing because we got to see the actual place from the fictional Tosca and the actual place they filmed my favorite opera in, which was very cool. And you can see St. Peter's right from the top. And so you can watch a clip. If you just type in like Tosca, Castel Sant'Angelo, Domingo, you can see a little clip. And someone was very sweet enough to put this on my Facebook page after I had put a picture up. And I should have just done like a scene for scene little photo album because I was standing in all the same spots that Domingo was in filming one of the songs for Tosca. So it was very cool. It was just really awesome. So then we walked over to St. Peter's and the Vatican, and I had no desire to stand in those lines, so we did not go in. Perhaps someday we'll go back and go in. I would like to go to see the Sistine Chapel. Of course, I cannot wait to see the Sistine Chapel, but I didn't want to stand in line. And then we met Seb and Bridie for dinner, and we just had more wonderful food. We went to this restaurant in Trastevere. Supporters will get the name. We waited about a half hour for a table, and I think we were there for 3 or 4 hours having wonderful food. We ended with some gelato at, again, one of these places that had the chocolate and hazelnut gelato, and then we went home. And then finally, just to wrap up our trip, the next day we already had reservations to meet Seb and Bridie and a tour guide for a several hour long tour of the Colosseum, the Palatine Hill, and the Roman Forum. And I will give you the name of this tour, supporters, because it was really the best. Jen on our trip had already recommended this to us, and it was fantastic. And I was already preparing myself for the Colosseum because I know the horrific history that took place there. And not surprisingly, it was pretty harrowing. I have written an op-ed about my experience there, and I've submitted it to several publications, and I will continue to do so until it gets published. In short, it was pretty unsettling to be there. It was also pretty remarkable to be there. It's an architectural feat, and it's so impressive, but it's also so sad. The amount of blood shed, both human and non-human, in this arena just boggles the mind. I cannot imagine people really understood what happened there, because watching people like smiling and posing for photos just felt really disrespectful to the lives destroyed there. It was just the surreal experience. And I have some pictures on Google Plus you can see of the most disturbing things we saw, one of which was these drains that were carved out because the animal carcasses that would be pulled up from the arena were left there until the crowds were gone. And so when they were left in these areas, their blood and their other liquids from their bodies would just drain out to these drains. And it's amazing how things that occurred so many hundreds of years ago could still have such an impact today. in terms of the ghosts that live there. I could feel it. And I think part of what was so upsetting, as you will agree, no doubt, is that it still goes on today. In fact, that's the focus of the editorial that I wrote, and hopefully you'll get to hear that publicly or read it publicly soon. And I will give supporters a preview of it prior to publication. So it was wonderful, and also it made an impression, let's say. And that was a wonderful full day, 5+ hours on our feet in the wonderful Roman sun, which I wouldn't want any other way. I love the sun. When our tour ended, we did one more little trek ourselves to the Theater of Pompey, where Julius Caesar was stabbed to death by Cassius and Brutus. And from there, we just decided to sit down together, the four of us, for one last glass of wine. Now, we were exhausted and we weren't really paying attention, but we were pretty much scammed into paying for a bunch of food we didn't order. So just be mindful of this. I think the problem is that we'd been so used to having food just foisted upon us by authentically well-meaning folks throughout our trip that when the server started bringing us olives and roasted vegetables and bread and grapes, we just accepted. And with each one, we were just like, oh, thank you. How lovely. And the server kind of made it seem like she was gifting us, but she clearly was taking advantage of us. And I was at this point tired and not speaking in Italian or doing much to make an effort to speak. So we were scammed, because at the end we got the bill and there was everything on the bill. We hadn't ordered any of this food. She was just bringing us food. So beware servers giving you food you didn't order. Now, by the time we got the bill and we saw we were charged for all of that, we had other things on our mind that caused us to rush out of this place. So this is partly why we didn't really argue and make a fuss about it. While we were sitting there and laughing and taking photos and posting these photos of whatever we were eating to Facebook, someone wrote to me on Facebook, someone posted, that a cat sanctuary was nearby. Cat sanctuary. Now, we had already heard about this piazza nearby that had been rumored to have had a ton of cats living there. Now, when we asked our tour guide about it hours before, he said, oh yeah, I'm aware of this place and I've heard about these cats, but the cats all disappeared and they're rumored to have been eaten by new groups of people moving into the area. Now, of course, that was appalling to us, but we didn't have any information to go by. So it was just perfect timing that it was so serendipitous that we were sitting in this cafe and I posted a photo of where we were and someone posted back about this cat sanctuary. So we immediately looked it up and we found out this piazza was really close by and that it closed at 5 p.m. and it was like 4:40 at this point. So whoever told me this on Facebook, thank you so much. I tried finding the post to thank you, but I couldn't. So thank you. So we hoofed it over to the piazza and we couldn't see anything. It just looked empty. Like we couldn't see anything. And as if it were meant for us, there was a group of people leaning over the rail looking at something. And I heard the leader say something about cats and feeding and homeless, something, just words I heard. And I said, excuse me, is there a sanctuary for cats nearby? And of course he just pointed below. There it was. And the three of us, I say the three of us, me and Bridie and Seb, were so ridiculously excited. I don't say the four of us because my husband loves our kitties and he loves my love of all kitties and all beings. But I can't say that he goes gaga the way we do or the way Seb and Bridie do. Just we all just got very excited. In fact, there were so many times when we were driving around Italy with Pasquale and Gretchen run Tierno tours, and we would give Pasquale a heart attack because he'd be driving and all of a sudden one of us, like me or Bridie or Seb, would go, oh my God, and look. And he'd go, what's happening? And we'd go, it's a cat. It's a cat on the side of the road. Just a cat happily sitting there. Just a cat in the grass. A cat here. A dog there. We would act as if we were seeing like some rare being. I think we almost gave Pasquale a heart attack like 5 times. Oh my God, there's a cat. Yeah, it's a cat. Like we see cats all the time. So we were very excited to find this place. And it's run by fabulous people. It's all volunteer run. Caring for these cats, whether they're blind or deaf or crippled or have neurological problems or perfectly healthy, and ensuring they stay that way. And they rely on donations from the public, and people can also adopt cats from them. So I highly recommend you visit their website. It's romancats.com. Romancats.com. Tell people about them. Visit them when you're in Rome. I took a video of all the cats that were there. I think it's on my social media pages. Please send them a donation. Every amount helps. It was such a wonderful find. It was just such a wonderful way to end our time together. And it was just perfect. And everything felt this way throughout this whole trip. There was like magical moment after magical moment after magical moment. In Filito, one place I didn't mention when we were in the Cilento region, one thing that happens in Italy a lot, and this happened to us when we were in Assisi, is there are a lot of festivals for saints. And they're these processions throughout the streets and just food and wine and just celebration. And that happened in Filito. So we were part of a procession for a particular saint, and they handed out these wonderful bread rolls, essentially. And, you know, it's part of this whole celebration of this saint. And I didn't even talk about that whole lunch. I mean, that was a whole feast we had above Filito. Oh my God, that was amazing. So we did this procession, and then that night the procession was still going on, and there was all the celebration in Filito, where the bed and breakfast is, that half of the group stayed at, where I did the cooking demo with Antonella. And so that night, it was still going on that night. Some people had dropped back and gone back to the place or driven back to the other villa. They were just tired. But we were just hanging out with Alessandro and another Pasquale and Antonella. And, you know, it was, I don't know, 10, 11, I don't even know what time it was. We walked back to the B&B, David and I and the three of them. And we got there. And of course, everyone was there, you know, still just drinking. Some people had gone to sleep. And we got to the top where everyone was hanging out. And it's up on a hill, so it's got a beautiful view. It was a full moon. So that already was just incredible. And then there were fireworks because it was the end of the celebration for the, it was just, are you kidding? Like, by the time we literally just arrived and their fireworks started, as if they'd been waiting like for us to get there. So honestly, there was just magical moment after magical moment after magical moment. And it was just fantastic. And I think it's a tribute to the people who came. It's a tribute to the people who ran it. And I'm so grateful. And we will have many more. Some in Italy. So we're thinking of Peru. We're thinking of Southeast Asia. We're thinking of other parts of Italy. We've already got just things planned already. Wheels are turning. So you will hear about these first if you're a supporter. And I thank you for your support. Speaking of which, thank you to our platinum patrons, Amy Muller, Sylvie Rockel, Peace Food Cafe, U.S. Army Captain Janie Mena, Deborah McDowell, members of the Norwegian Vegan Society, Tim Anderson, David Cabrera, and Alexander Gray, Alexander Gray Associates, Kavitha, Carrie Parker, and Carol Morgan Cox. Thank you for your patronage, and you can do the same at patreon.com/ColleenPatrickGaudreau. I want to close reiterating Natasha's beautiful words, because I think she sums up what it means to live consciously, so beautifully. Just as vegans have to get in touch with the very worst of humanity in order to understand why we cannot idly sit by while living beings are being exploited, we also get to see the very best in humanity, in the millions of selfless acts around the globe, stemming from a higher collective consciousness that will bring about monumental change. Thank you, everyone listening, for your selfless acts, for your commitment to a higher consciousness that will bring about monumental change for the animals. This is Colleen Patrick-Goudreau. Thank you for listening.